Shalom, this is Gamliel Shmalo. In Iov chapters 36 and 37, the young and wise Elihu offers his fourth and final response to Iov and to Iov's friends. In my previous installment, I noted that three plus a fourth is a biblical pattern in which we see three of a kind and a fourth that launches us to a new level. In the case of Elihu's responses, perhaps the first three responses are resolutions to what seem to be the irreconcilable dichotomies between Iov and each one of his three friends, while the fourth response, today's response, is something new and unique, of a different kind altogether. So today, I'd like to examine what might be Elihu's unique insight as it rises from chapters 36 and 37. Much of this book has revolved around Iov's innocence or his guilt. Has he done something to deserve his fate? Are his sufferings just punishments? Eliphaz was the clearest example. He said that Iov's sufferings were just punishments. And in chapter 22 in particular, he gave a withering indictment against Iov. And Iov, for his part, always protested that he's innocent and his sufferings were, therefore, completely unjust. Now, as much as they disagree, Eliphaz and Iov are in essential agreement about one thing. The meaning of suffering is to be found in the past. What you have done in the past explains and to some degree justifies what is done to you in the present and what will be done to you in the future. So in our chapters, which begin with Elihu added and said, Elihu seems to overturn this conception entirely. Already in chapter 34, he claimed that sufferings, like dreams, may come as a form of divine speech, as a warning, or as a preventative measure to prevent tragic future errors. Suffering is not always brought about by the past. Sometimes they are, but sometimes afflictions come for the sake of the future. Elihu seems to develop this idea in our chapters. True, God is a fair judge and will punish the wicked and will care for the poor. But beginning in verse 15, Elihu describes a different dynamic altogether. Sometimes God delivers the poor by means of affliction, playing on the words ani be'onyo. Sometimes afflictions come to the righteous, and Iov is one of these, for some future benefit. You, Iov, you may have been on the edge of a pit of quicksand, verse 16. And you are being set up for some prosperous future table. You have indeed received that which is normally saved for the wicked. The justice of God, however, will end up supporting you, but only if you press on with all your strength. Iov, don't hope for death or for the nullification of all existence, even though that might be a natural response. Don't despair. True friends stay close to their friends in difficult times, and God is close to the oppressed in their time of trouble. Now, perhaps we've been lousy friends, talking too much and listening too little, but God has been sustaining you all along, saying nothing and listening to your every word. Just soldier on, Iov, soldier on. Elihu then launches into a song about the wonders of God, divine majesty, as perceived in the natural world. This is how every man, or perhaps the every man, may perceive God, seeing him only mirachok, from afar. We don't know by what means God brings natural phenomenon, like rain, snow, lightning, ice storms. Iov, do you know these things? Do you know how God lays his command on them and causes the lightning of his cloud to shine? That's chapter 37, verse 15. If we can't understand the how of God, we certainly can't understand the why of God. If so, what should we do? Elihu ends his speech with the moral of the story: therefore, people fear him. The proper response to suffering is not philosophical or even theological. After all, God doesn't regard the wise of heart, in the last verse of our chapter. So if the proper response is not philosophical or theological, what is the proper response? It's this idea of fearing him. The proper response is religious. Sometimes it is productive to look at the past and see what needs to be corrected, but not always. Sometimes looking to the past is only confusing and frustrating, asking, why did God do this to me, when we know that we probably will never receive a response. In such situations, we should rather look to the future, saying, what must I do to live through and to grow through my suffering? As a paraphrase of Rav Soloveitchik in Kol Dodi Dofek. That seems to be Elihu's radical break with the other friends, the fourth response of the fourth friend that jumps us up to a new level. Even when suffering comes about because of the past, it is a missed opportunity if it leaves us focused on the past. It should instead always point us towards the future. What should I do about my suffering, and what should I do about the suffering of those around me? This is true if it is an engine that drives the sinner to repent, and this lesson is thrown into relief when the story's protagonist didn't sin at all, when the past is a mystery, and therefore the only productive perspective would be focused on the future.